You can interact with us so many ways. Go to www.emsgarage.com. Email us, emsgarage@gmail.com. Go to our Twitter account, @emsgarage. Or you can download us on iTunes. Just search EMS Garage. You can also call us, 303-720-6001.
The EMS Garage.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the EMS Garage. It's the week. It's the final week. And if you're listening to this episode, you might be listening on the plane because, you know, I'm just that nice that I'm going to put it out on Thursday this week instead of the normal Friday post date and just let everybody have a chance to listen to my voice on the interweb there. Hopefully you'll be downloading it to your iPod and not trying to download it while you're on the plane. But if you are, that's even awesome. Well, tonight I thought it would be fun to have just one guest. And I think that, you know, just in light of everything we're doing this week, Chronicles of EMS debuting and how all that's going to come up, we're going to first, I found this awesome, oh gosh, Justin. Okay, so Justin Shore is joining me tonight, but I found this really good research article. It was about those TED hose that they put on you in the hospital and how they really affect the outcome of EMS. And yeah, and we should be putting them on in the ambulance. I'm like, who would have thought? So, and then if we have enough time, we'll talk about Chronicles of EMS, whatever. But I thought maybe we could talk about that. So joining me tonight, Mr. Justin Shore, the only guest on the garage.
Good evening, Mr. Montero, but I have bad news for you. We're not going to talk about compression socks or anything like that.
Why? Wait, what? No?
Sorry, buddy. Hit the mute button. I'm taking over your show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Happy Hour, the roving Happy Medic Forum, where I come in and talk about what I want to talk about. I'm going to bring on some special guests this evening that I want to do, and hopefully you'll have fun listening to them. But first, like Montero was saying, it is the big week of Chronicles of EMS. As you all know, and you've been following along, Mark Glencourse and I had a very educational and fun week in San Francisco back in November, and we turned that into a TV show. Ted Setla and the Chronicles team have been working day and night to make it a beautiful show, and the premiere party is Friday night. We're premiering it not only at the Hotel Frank in San Francisco, but we're also premiering it live online from 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific time. You can go log on to chroniclesofems.com. You'll be able to watch the premiere party live with hosts going around. You're going to be able to see behind-the-scenes footage, bloopers, Mark Glencourse singing, me dancing. It's an amazing show. You're absolutely going to love it. And then the episode goes live at 5 o'clock. It's about 20 minutes long. I have seen it, and I love it. In fact, I'm going to watch it in the background here while we're talking to our guests. The big topic tonight, everybody, is fire-based EMS, working, not working. Most of you are shaking your heads right now, giggling that, of course, fire-based EMS doesn't work. I grew up in it. That's one of the things I know well. I'm currently working in it now. My current system could be doing it a lot better, but pretty much all we did was give the paramedics new shirts, new retirements, painted the ambulances red, and all of a sudden it was the wrong thing to do. So what I want to do is bring on some people that I've been talking about this with, both on Twitter, by email, and by smoke signal. My first guest tonight, you all know him as the Angry Redhead, runs the Life Under the Lights Bar and Grill over at lifeunderthelights.com. Mr. Chris Kaiser, how are you this evening, sir?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, it sounds like we've got a little bit of delay. Are you on the other side of the country by chance?
You know, my internet connection actually froze solid this morning. It was, first it was shaken by this earthquake, and then it got covered by 17 feet of snow. They actually trucked it in from the East Coast, and it was frozen solid, so that could be why we're having this delay.
I That's fantastic. I had no idea that you had a background in geology and weather. That's fantastic. Meteorology. Is it going to snow tomorrow?
I can guarantee unequivocally that there is a 28.3% chance of snow somewhere in the world.
That's fantastic odds. I'll take the points. Chris, let me get to the meat and potatoes of this whole thing. You, on your blog, really push this idea of EMS-based EMS. You recently put up an article you wrote a little while ago where you say that EMS doesn't necessarily need to be tied to the fire service, regardless of the rescue component. And one of the comparisons I love that you make is, bus drivers also have driving responsibilities the same as paramedics. Why aren't we, deployed off of buses? Can you expand a little bit and just give me some more background on what you mean by EMS-based EMS?
Well, I always say that when I'm driving the ambulance, I wave at police officers, firefighters, fire trucks, other ambulances, taxi cabs, and garbage trucks, because we all have some component of the same job. And in the article where I did write one article where I called out fire-based EMS a bit, I brought it in that there is a lot of shared components in the job. However, they're not one and the same, in my opinion. Now, I'm not saying fire-based EMS is bad. However, when they use it as an afterthought instead of what it truly is, which is a specialty healthcare discipline, then that irks me a bit. I like treating EMS with the respect that it deserves as a standalone healthcare function with a lot of public safety components. And EMS-based EMS is when you take EMS as seriously as it should be taken and treat it as a specialized healthcare function.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of fire departments out there, and I am a firefighter. I love being a firefighter. It's the most fun you can legally have with your clothes on fighting a house fire. And I've been a firefighter for my entire life. I love doing it. However, when they don't take EMS seriously, when they treat it as an afterthought, that irks me. The example I would have would be a volunteer fire department or even a small career fire department that has a third service transport provider. In a lot of communities, they want to take over that ambulance service. I mean, that's a lot of communities have made that transition from a secondary provider, a third service provider to the fire department. And it may make a lot of economic sense in those cases in those communities. However, when they say, we've got all these people here, let's send them all to EMT school and send a few of them to paramedic school, and then we'll put them out in the truck once they all get their cards. Well, I disagree with that.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And yeah, I disagree with that as well.
And I've seen that happen. I've seen that happen in communities here in the Midwest where we have some significant financial challenges facing our local governments. And with that, they're losing the meat and potatoes of EMS, which I think is actually specialized healthcare providers that have a lot of knowledge base and experience to be doing what we're supposed to do. It can't be a you fall, you call, we haul, that's all system. It has to be a healthcare discipline that encompasses the entire spectrum of care. And I think that's where we should be going with EMS 2.0 and even with EMS today.
Now, we've been talking about, Chris, you and I back and forth a little bit on the blogs about, and a lot of people on their blogs and their medium have as well, about raising the educational standards for EMS professionals. But so long as the industry is tied to getting as many low-paying people in as they can to keep costs down so that these transport services can still make a profit, is the future of for-profit medical care going to rely on these low-trained, low-wage jobs?
There's nothing wrong with making a profit even in healthcare, in my opinion. I worked for a clinic for a number of years that did not take anything, did not take Medicare, did not take Medicaid. It was either private insurance or self-pay. If you came in, you were greeted at the door. You were within seeing the doctor within the treatment room within 15 minutes at the most. You got whatever medical care you needed, including x-rays, lab tests, and minor surgical procedures, even suturing and fracture care, within 15 minutes of walking in the door. And it was good care with great follow-up. With that said, we didn't have the low-income, the Medicare, the Medicaid patients. And is that bad to do economic triage with that? I'm not sure. It did make the people that were willing to pay for it get great service. And it did triage the people that weren't willing to pay for it to the other clinics and the other avenues where they got significantly less quality of service.
But should profit really be driving patient care in the street?
Everybody has a moral obligation to render emergency care to another citizen.
Absolutely.
Healthcare isn't necessarily a right. Your right to swing your fist ends at my nose. And nobody has the right to compel me to assist another human being if I don't want to. With that said, I'm going to help somebody. It's my moral obligation to do so. But I got to make a living. I have to make a living. So there has to be a financial component to healthcare and to EMS. The low-paying jobs that we've got are because we're in such a low profit-making business. If we had more of a profit component, that would translate out to the providers.
Do you think one of the solutions, if we're going to be stuck with for-profit emergency patient care, would it make sense for some of these smaller companies to roll in with, say, an Anthem Blue Cross or with a Kaiser so that they fall under the umbrella of these massive profits so we can start getting some of that money funneling down to where we need it on the street? Or should it stay completely separated, that the ambulance service still has to bill the insurance company and hope to goodness that they get reimbursed?
The fee-for-service model that we currently work under has failed. The massive transport fees that we charge people for emergency care are unfair. It shouldn't cost somebody $500 to $700 or more in some cases to call for an ambulance. It just shouldn't. I have a moral conflict with that. And I think that the solution is to look at other aspects of the business. In any business, you make profit by increasing your total revenue without increasing costs, or decreasing your total cost while revenue stays the same. Now, if we branched into other service offerings or a way where we could cause indirect profits by saving money from another branch of the healthcare system, I think that's where our money's going to come from. Rather than relying on increased reimbursement from the fee-for-service model or some continuance of what we're doing now. I wrote an article on paramedics providing your yearly physical. The healthcare providers, the physicians say that it's an unnecessary cost, that it costs billions of dollars in healthcare money that really isn't necessary. And I say that's a perfect opportunity for paramedics to go in and do the annual physical. I think that's one of the avenues where we could make a significant healthcare savings while increasing access to primary care in the field.
Absolutely, and it's a great model. It falls in with the community care element that a lot of the advanced practice paramedic programs are starting to put in. When I worked out on the reservation in South Central New Mexico, we did weekly home visits, where every day we had a list of four or five of our sickest people in the neighborhood, and we would go talk to them, check the fridge, check their blood pressure, their blood sugar. At the time, as a new EMT, I hated it. I absolutely hated it. Every morning at 9 o'clock, I dreaded driving my paramedic around. But then I realized that when the bells rang, we never went and saw those people. Mm-hmm. And if we did, by chance, see one of them, we knew what their baseline was. Now, that was in a community of 2,200. If I try to implement such a program, say, in, I don't know, San Francisco, California, where I've got 780,000 people at night, and I've got over 1 million people during the day, and I've got 19 transport ambulances and a budget that's shrinking, it's going to be difficult to really provide that without being able to show a decrease in cost pretty quick. So I guess my question would be, how can we get into a community model where we're doing the physicals and we're kind of taking the load off of these doctors by doing some of this stuff in the field? How can we move to that and quickly show a benefit for our system?
Well, my first kind of tongue-in-cheek question is, how many paramedics do you have in your fire engines? Because they could be doing that. The other answer is, we have to show Medicare, Medicaid, the insurance companies, and the payers that there is a benefit to them to pay a lessened fee to a paramedic to provide that level of primary care than there is to have the transport ambulance transport them to a physician emergency room. to provide the same level of care.
Do you think the doctors will let us do that?
I think the emergency physicians would love to because they are way overworked. I think the primary care physicians would need some convincing, but that's where we have to be a true profession and work hand in hand with them.
So, Chris, would you say that EMS today is public safety or public health, and what do you think it should be in the future?
I say that EMS is a healthcare profession. I don't like putting it into public health because we don't do the epidemiology. I don't like putting it into public safety because we're not law enforcement. And, I can start all the IV lines I want to on a house fire, but it's not really going to do the same thing as the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
So I say EMS is itself. EMS is its own third public safety pillar. And there you go. We're our own healthcare system and we're our own public safety. I really don't know the answer to that other than we are who we are. We've created this system.
Mm-hmm.
We need to own it.
I love it. And let me just ask you one more thing, and this is gonna kind of segue into my next guest. Real quick, are you less of a paramedic because you're a fireman?
I know paramedics that are less of paramedics because they're firemen. I'm not. I may be less of a fireman because I'm a paramedic, even though I love fighting fire. I love getting down and dirty, driving fast, breaking things, swinging axes, spraying water. But I spend most of my limited time training on EMS. There you go.
Great. I love it. Mr. Chris Kaiser from Life Under the Lights, thank you very much, sir. And Life Under the Lights Bar and Grill, loved your series on EMS pay. Love to hear more about it and cannot wait to see you again in San Francisco, sir. Thank you so much.
It's going to be wonderful, buddy. I'll see you then. Thanks for having me on.
See you there. All right. My next guest I want to bring up had some very fantastic comments along the lines of paramedics as firefighters and fire-based EMS. Sean Eddy, who is the editor of MedicMadness.com, a blog that just came up in December of last year. Sean, good to have you on the Happy Hour.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. And a little bit of delay there. Are you on the other side of the country as well?
I am in Southern California.
Ooh, so no snow where you are.
No, it's cold, but there's no snow.
I love it. I love it. So what got you into blogging?
I've always been kind of a technical person. I've designed web pages for a while. Just kind of looking for a venue to express my thoughts and kind of came across it and started writing what I feel, and here I am.
Great. Now, you mentioned on the blog MedicMadness.com that you've worked as an EMT, as a paramedic, and you're now a paramedic supervisor. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Okay. And I imagine you're not going to tell us where, for obvious reasons, unless you'd like to, but I can assume it's a for-profit ambulance company?
Yes, that's correct. And I can't say who I work for, unfortunately.
Yeah. If you don't mind, we can call it F&B Ambulance.
Sure.
Just for reference. Now, how long have you been with F&B there, Sean?
I'll be going on 5 years next month.
Great. And it's down in Southern or Central California?
A little bit of both. More Southern.
Okay. And to get into it, like I was talking with Chris about fire-based EMS and his thoughts on EMS-based EMS, you heard the discussion we were having. What are your thoughts on what he was saying about the community treatment aspect that EMS could branch out into?
I've read about that quite a bit, and I think that it would be an outstanding way for us to get better wages and better reimbursement. I think what we're doing right now is certainly not working. We're really struggling with Medicare and Medi-Cal. Private insurance seems to pay fairly well, but that it's not the majority of what we're transporting.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, are you seeing abuse in your system like I'm seeing, not necessarily from people who are quote-unquote uninsured, but from people who have this sense of entitlement that they deserve an ambulance, so gosh darn it, you're going to give me a ride?
Absolutely. I've worked for a couple of different ambulance providers in different cities, and I see it everywhere I go.
And one big thing, what really got me into reading your blog was when you started talking about against medical advice refusals. Just a little while ago, I put up a post where I talked about not lying to your patients, and it's important that if they say, "Do you think I need to go?" and we don't think so, to say so. Now, one thing that I notice is that my system has two signature for refusals, two signature sections. We've got the against medical advice, which is the paragraph that says, "I have a medical problem that needs to be seen in a hospital, and I don't want to go anywhere." And then I've got another one called patient declines transport, which says that they might have something wrong, an ambulance was offered, and they'd rather not go. From what I understand, it sounds like your system may not have that declines transport option. Am I correct in assuming that?
That's correct. We only have a refusal of medical advice. I'm sorry, refusal against medical advice.
Yeah. So you pretty much transport or it's always that it's going to default to a transport? There's really no way for you to try to route people into other avenues to get their treatment, or is there something? Is there maybe another system in place where it's not either transport or against medical advice?
No, we pretty much either transport or we have them sign AMA, and pretty much anybody who is going to not go to the hospital, then we are to advise them of their risks from refusing up to and including death and all that good stuff. And then we have them sign AMA, otherwise they transport.
Yeah, the side effects could include seizure, coma, death is exactly. Something I like to tell them. Now, your service responds with a local fire?
Yes.
And do they have their own refusal of transport mechanism, or does that decision rely solely with your paramedics?
They do have that. However, they also only sign AMAs, and that's due to a policy set forth by the county.
Okay. Yeah, we in California, for those of you that don't know, me up here in San Francisco as well, each county has their own little fiefdom of EMS controls and protocols. I've even got a hospital outside of the county that I have to have special permission to transport to, just because it's over 2 miles over the county border where they can do different skills. We still have a state license. You and I have the same state license, but completely different county accreditations, which could be confusing for people, say, in New Mexico, where I was from, where you have a state license and boom, you're good to go. So let me ask you a question. CK and I touched on it a little bit, and you also mentioned on your blog at medicmadness.com about it being difficult for a paramedic to keep up their skills when they're also trying to be a firefighter. Is this from your observations from where you are or where you've been, or can you give me some background into that opinion?
That opinion's not necessarily just be a paramedic and firefighter. I'm more referring to split job responsibilities. We have a very few engines, or a very select few areas in my area of service where there are paramedic firefighters, and there are some that are very, very good at what they do, and there are some that are not. Just as there is private ambulance EMTs and paramedics. My experience is more based off of what I'm experiencing since my promotion. My job responsibilities are no longer checking out my drugs, logging onto my ambulance and going and running calls all day and then going home. Now my duties are split amongst administrative, scheduling, quality assurance, customer service, complaint resolution, and then when the system gets busy, then I go run calls or I respond to mass casualty incidents. I have seen where I am struggling and I have to constantly read and I have to constantly work to keep up on my skills so that I don't slip and that I don't forget things.
Okay, so it's something you've noticed just since you got promoted and there's these other things that are taking up your time. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, it's being a paramedic is tough enough to keep up on. I mean, there's so many different things. There's so many different illnesses. There's so many different conditions. There's so many different things that we're going to run into. Mm-hmm. And keeping up on it is a whole job by itself. I'm not saying it can't be done. It is difficult, though.
It It is, and you know, I know, I try to work my butt off at being as good as I can be, and regardless of what someone else's specialty might be, I've known very good police officer paramedics. I've known very good paramedics who are also insane baseball fans who can recite statistics off the top of their head for the entire history of baseball. Yet it doesn't impact them being a good paramedic. It's just something that they take very seriously and they're very passionate about. I think it's obvious from anyone who's been following me online for the last year and a half that I have no life. I have no hobbies. So being a paramedic and being a firefighter for me really is two passions that just happen to, because of where I am, fit together nicely. And I like that. But I definitely agree with you that sometimes when I'm out doing a high-rise drill, I wish I was back, you know, reviewing my 12 leads. Or maybe over at Mark Glenn Corse's blog, looking at some leads and some traces and quizzing myself on that. One thing real quick, you also mentioned on your blog about too many paramedics on scene, making it worse for patients. And absolutely, if there's five paramedics on the scene and only two interventions are going on, you've got three extra people that we can pretty much move out of the room, right?
Right. I'm a firm believer that one paramedic is pretty much sufficient for pretty much any call. Two at the most. Once you get more than that, it's just people are getting in your way. And, I have seen scene times increase with multiple paramedics. The more paramedics you have on scene, the less times you're going to get to do interventions, which means that your skills are going to fall. If you're working on a single medic ambulance, and we'll just say that you intubate 10 times a month. I don't go anywhere near that, but if that was the case, if you all of a sudden now you have a paramedic partner, that's going to go down to five times a month and so forth. And the same goes for assessments and just everything that we do. The more people you have on scene, the less you're going to get to do it. The single medic system that I prefer, you have the one paramedic. They're doing the radio report. They're doing the patient care. They're doing the assessment. They're doing the interventions. And it makes, in my opinion, for an all-around better medic. Makes them better at what they do. Makes them, it makes for stronger paramedics.
Absolutely, and I assume that when you say a single medic, you're taking that other paramedic off of that ambulance, and you're putting a whole other ambulance in service.
Yes,
I love it. That's fantastic. There does seem to be this disconnect where some systems are saying, well, two paramedics on an ambulance are no good, so we're gonna make it one, and then we're gonna take the other job and just forget about it. And that cuts your resources in half of what you could have had. You still have that one ambulance on the street, and it's still as useful, but they're missing that opportunity to really double up on their service capabilities. And it's exactly. Frustrating to watch from the streets, as I'm sure you've seen in your field management role. The less medics, more skills argument that's out there right now, I do have to slightly disagree with. Because if you've got five paramedics on the street and they're getting, you know, those tubes, they're getting those lines, if you cut it down to three paramedics, now there's two patients that aren't getting that ALS intervention as soon as they should. Do you disagree?
Well, it sounds like you're referring to three ambulances as opposed to five ambulances. When I say less paramedics, I'm saying less paramedics on every call. I'm not referring to our coverage.
I mean in respect to, if you have less paramedics on the street, that those paramedics will become kind of, not super paramedics, but they will become refined at what they do because they will be the only ones doing it.
That's kind of not exactly what I was saying.
Okay.
I was more referring to if you have two paramedics, if I have a paramedic partner on my ambulance, and if I run 10 calls a month that might be critical, I now have to split those calls with my paramedic partner because Chances are we're going to be alternating between driving and attending. I'm not necessarily referring to paramedics on the streets. I'm all for having adequate coverage. So I think we're not exactly on the same page.
Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense for me now. that you're talking about that one resource, not necessarily that paramedic's skills, but taking those two paramedics that are with each other and splitting them up into two resources.
Yes.
Excellent. I love it. Absolutely love it. One more question for you, Mr. Sean Eddy.
Okay.
Are you familiar with what Cincinnati did just a little while ago with their change in triage protocols?
I am not.
They started, or Cleveland, excuse me, it was Cleveland. Cleveland started telling their Alpha and Omega callers that were triaged as Alpha and Omega that they will not be getting an ambulance resource right away. And it caused a little bit of an uproar online. I tried to get in with the commissioners and get them on the phone and ask them about it. And it sounds like it was done purely for budgetary reasons. Do you think that system allocation decisions like that should be made from a monetary point of view, a systems point of view? Where do you think that decision should come from?
Well, it all pretty much comes down to money and what we're able to provide. Whether we're a private ambulance service, whether we're fire-based, whether we're third service, it all comes down to money, and you have to have money to provide the service. We recently started implementing a similar system. These people are not necessarily waiting. Ambulances do not respond to Omega callers in my area at all. That's considered a public assist. That's maybe it's different in the other areas, but that's like for someone who needs a help off the ground into their bed or something that doesn't require transport. The Alpha responses, we're actually sending BLS ambulances code 2. And then if needed, if they get on scene and assess and decide that that person needs an ALS ambulance, then they'll call for backup, assuming that the ALS ambulance is further away than their ETA to the hospital. So that's actually worked really well for us. From a system point of view also, we have more paramedic ambulances on the streets available to run the calls that they're really needed on. Mm-hmm. So I think that using resources a little more wisely is always a good idea. I'm not sure that I would necessarily agree with saying that you're not going to get an ambulance right now or how long they're going to have to wait, because I can tell you many times I show up on a what we would call a priority 3 or a alpha response, and depending on how the call was EMD'd and how the caller answered the questions, I've shown up on those calls and they turn out to be a full arrest. I've shown up on them and it was, congestive heart failure or something that truly did need an ALS ambulance. It's not very often that it happens, but the EMD system is not perfect because you're depending on people on the other end to answer the appropriate questions.
Well, it also relies on the two people who know the least about what's going on, the caller and the call taker, to have a conversation that is going to guide the people who do know what's going on. And it's frustrating that the weakest chain is the one we can't avoid unless we put MDs on the other end of the phone. That's not happening anytime soon.
Yeah, there's actually a system. I believe Kansas City, I had a buddy that worked there for a number of years, and they started doing a system where their dispatchers, their call takers were actually paramedics, and that was actually considered a promotion. I'm not too familiar with that system because I didn't work there myself. How they implemented that, if they use the same EMD protocols that we're using, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and if you've been following on the blog or what Mark talks about, the Northeast Ambulance Service just put into service this new program called Pathways, which makes no attempt to triage the patient whatsoever. But it was written by physicians, and it gives the call taker specific questions to ask, and it brings up a new screen. It's like a choose-your-own-adventure.
Okay.
Is there bleeding? Yes. No. How much? More than a mugful? Less than a mugful? And that will slowly gear the response from the system in real time. It'll change it. Me, I get tapped out for a 6 delta 1, and when I get on scene and they have a twisted ankle and I call back and say, how did the twisted ankle get coded as a 6 delta 1? Well, the caller was around the corner, so they couldn't guarantee that they were breathing, that the airway was patent, that they were alert. So it automatically got coded worst case scenario instead of real case scenario. So it's something frustrating, but it's good to know that there's other opinions out there, and you know that things are getting done in all sorts of different types of systems. So you would be a fan of, like Chris Kaiser was saying, a getting away from public safety and public health into our own domain. Do you think that's a good idea?
I disagree a little bit on his public safety stance. I do lean more towards us as a healthcare profession, but we do have a public safety aspect to what we do. But I mean, I would say that overall, yeah, I do agree that we need to start leaning more towards the healthcare profession, and I think it would help us as far as reimbursement. It would definitely help with wages, which would ultimately lead to more qualified people working in the field because we could be more selective. So I guess my short answer is yes.
And a good short answer it is. Mr. Sean Eddy, at Sean Eddy on Twitter. We can also find you at medicmadness.com. I'm following it. It's a great blog. Keep up the writing, and thank you for joining me on the Happy Hour this evening, sir.
Thank you.
All right, and for those of you listening, do not adjust your podcast. Chris Montero is chomping at the bit to get in on this conversation. He's over in another chat room right now having a conversation with Jamie Davis, the pod medic, about compression socks. I want to get Jamie Davis in here because I want to talk about podcasts, and I want to bring the geek, Chris Montero, in to talk about some podcasts. Mr. Davis, Mr. Montero, good evening.
So you roll the socks slowly up over the calves, and this is something we learned in nursing school. It's just a pain in the butt. And,
where does the hole go for their – oh, the toes. Sorry.
Right. Justin, you wanted to talk about something?
Yeah, you know, guys, up there with therapeutic hypothermia, compression socks are going to be the next big thing.
That's what I heard.
I agree with you totally. I wanted to bring you both on. You've been listening to this EMS-based EMS, fire-based EMS. We're talking about money. We're talking about the way – calls are dispatched, all this stuff. Jamie, your thoughts on this? I mean, you're listed in your bio as EMS chief of the community fire company in Maryland. Am I correct?
I was a former EMS chief in my department, and I'm on the board now and help try to steer this ship. It's a primarily volunteer service, is a fire-based EMS service. One of the challenges associated with that is that, and I've seen this in most of the volunteer companies around me, EMS is seen as a revenue stream. It's a necessary evil. There's not a whole lot of support that ebbs and flows as new administrations are brought into play year after year. But overall, there's a whole lot of, well, you can't make me ride the ambulance if I don't want to. I'm just a firefighter. That's the volunteer side of things. On the other side, in our paid services in the Mid-Atlantic region, in the major metropolitan areas, Washington, D.C. still has challenges keeping a medical director because of the issues they face with their EMS service. Baltimore City, it's common knowledge among the people I know that work there that if you want to get into Baltimore City Fire Department to ride the fire trucks, you have to ride 18 months on the medic. And once you've put in your time, you can graduate to the fire trucks. It is seen as a punishment if there are not enough EMS personnel to be demoted off the fire trucks for the day to run on the medic unit. And that is the standard in this region. As long as EMS is the way you pay your dues so that you can do the fun stuff, as long as it is a punishment or a demotion for the low guy on the totem pole when you need somebody to run the medic, EMS and the fire-based service in this area is severely broken.
And you can definitely say it. I know he's still listening. Chris Kaiser is out there. And, you can say that EMS is the redheaded stepchild of the fire service. But I think that stepchild has grown up, and it's time to show the stepdad how to respect his mother. We definitely need to stop trying to let the big red machine push us around. But unfortunately, I am tied to the big red machine, as are many of my service brothers and sisters, that there just isn't that framework for EMS to branch out, whether it be especially municipal in these days of the budget cuts, and for that ambulance service, that EMS service, to really stand on its own. Do you see any short-term solutions to that?
Well, unfortunately, and to do something like that, to step up and stop being pushed around, it requires leadership. And the problem in that is the leadership is all fire-based. You know, I don't know anybody that worked 20 years on a medic unit and became chief of a major metropolitan fire department. It doesn't happen. That is, at least in my experience, maybe somebody out there can prove me wrong, but everyone at the upper echelon in the chief officer positions are coming up through the fire service, have no interest in doing anything for EMS other than the fact that the mayor, who is their boss, says you have to run EMS calls. And so they do what they have to do to fulfill that duty, and I don't think they do a bad job of it, but unfortunately, EMS gets pushed into this second tier, and you might have a chief of EMS within the department. You know, for instance, I was chief of EMS in my department. I ranked as an assistant chief lower than the deputy chief to the fire chief.
And we've got the same thing in San Francisco. We have very successful EMS chiefs, but everybody knows that if you go up the career path of EMS through paramedic captain, you know, up through a division of deputy chief, that you'll never make chief of the department.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to rise to the top of that heap that way. And because of that, since the chief of the department and probably the deputy chief and other assistant chiefs are all going to be fire-based, they're going to be the decision makers. They're going to shift the position in their favor because they want to maintain more fire trucks and they want to maintain more firefighting capability. I understand that. That's why we need to take EMS away from the fire service, because they don't have their interests aren't really all that well entwined. I mean, structural firefighting mm-hmm. and rescue and patient care don't have anything to do with each other directly. There are things that cross over and mesh a little bit, but really, when a fire happens, and I've trained as a firefighter too, I work on both sides, but as fires happen, the medic unit sits there and waits for either to do rehab or if there's a person that needs patient care. There is no – and so how do you fight that? Well, you'd fight it by not being part of that system. You come and respond to provide patient care and rehab as needed, but you do not act as part of the fire department anymore. And I think we need to move into – I like the idea of talking about health or public health. I think it should be community health, and EMS services should be tied to the local healthcare facilities and run through them. They're going to have much better access to the physicians and medical directors that oversee their level of care. And they're going to have, I think, better opportunities to advance their pay structure as well. Because, around here, the lowest trained hospital aide makes as much or more than an EMTB with 6 months of certificate under their belt. And this other person walks in and gets a job at the hospital and gets their CPR card and they're ready to go. And where's the fairness in that? And I think that's part of the problem is we're tied to another system.
Montero, what do you think of that?
Oh, man, where do I start? You know, I love a lot of what's been said here tonight. And so let me start off with a few premises. One, our good friend Skip Kirkwood, and somebody said it in the chat room that, oh, what does Skip Kirkwood know? Well, he's pretty astute, along with being a lawyer and a few other things. He said blank-based EMS is just that. You get what you pay for. Hospital-based EMS, police-based EMS, public health-based, whatever you want to call it, fire-based EMS, I don't care.
Postal service-based EMS.
Right.
There's many different
garbage
variations.
Garbage truck-based EMS, right?
They know the neighborhood,
You're going to live at the will of the master. And I think that we're seeing this as fallout throughout the nation. I saw this week a couple more fire agencies cut their medic response because of the economy. So where does that leave, you know, so they went, oh, yeah, we want that. And then, oh, well, times are tough. We're going to get rid of that because that's hard and it's really makes us busy and, ew, it's kind of icky. The second thing I want to say is we all have a physician in our life, surgeon, whatever, I've always made the analogy that having a paramedic and a firefighter, much like Sean said, and he, I think he hit the nail on the head here, that it's hard to do both. It's hard to be very proficient at both things. Would you want your surgeon to also be ASE certified mechanic and work on your car and have to be proficient at both? No. I want my surgeon to know how to take out my appendix when it comes time, and I want my mechanic to know how to take care of the Johnson rod and all the bearings or, I don't know, whatever's in there. I'm not a mechanic. So, you know, but whatever is going on with my car, I want him to be very proficient at it. He doesn't need to know how my heart works, and he doesn't need to know about the SA node and all those things. He needs to be good at my car. So, and with that being said, how do we pay for it? And I think that's the bigger question. And I agree with Chris. It's got to be its own standalone third service. I think it's a combination of things. Public health, it unfortunately for him, public health is more than just epidemiology. It's about breaking down the silos of healthcare and really integrating into the process. Public health is 75% prevention, 25% healthcare, whereas healthcare, primary care, is 75% healthcare, 25% prevention. Why couldn't we be 50-50 as an industry? Okay, so there's one place. Those are other, so there's where we could be starting to look at how we do this. I don't know if we should necessarily saddle up to the insurance industry because they've never made anybody happy except themselves to make themselves money. We need to be in our communities saying that we, because I work for an EMS only government agency. Our only sole mission in the entire world is to provide ambulance service. But you know what we're doing? We're doing a community paramedic program, and we're doing some of those things that can be done anywhere. And I really think that it can be cost effective and very efficient, and another way to supplement what's being done, the disservice that's being done in primary care and healthcare. So I've rambled long enough, but I just have to say that, man, I don't want to disparage fire-based EMS. I want to say that we need to do what's right for the patient. And most of the time, that's having a very proficient ambulance crew arrive with other responders that can help us take care of that patient.
And would you think that a lot of this might just be because this profession is so young that we really haven't found where we fit in the system?
I think that's part of it. I think it's also part of the problem is we eat our young. We don't allow a lot of innovation. And if you're coming up through the ranks of either A, the fire service, or B, the EMS service, and you have an original thought, and I think this is where our generation's really going to help move this forward, that you're kind of slapped around and went, huh, sorry, kid, that wasn't the way it was done in my day, and that'll never change. And we do it to ourselves. We're one of the few industries in healthcare. If we're going to say we're healthcare, and I agree we are, if we're going to say we're healthcare, then let's choose a freaking name. And I'm probably going to lose my iTunes clean tag for that, but let's choose a name. We are all paramedics. Let's become that. Let's be all paramedics. I'm a primary care paramedic is a basic EMT. An intermediate care paramedic is an intermediate paramedic. And so, I mean, the list goes on and on, but you know what all those names have in common? They all have paramedic, just like a nurse. Jamie's probably an RN, maybe a BSN. I don't know, but he's a nurse, and there's no problem calling him a nurse, and that's okay. His industry's figured that out. And so has doctor. All my doctors that I see for various things call them doctors. You know, there's a neurologist and there's the primary care doc and there's the dude that does this and that. They all have different things that they've specialized in. But at the end of the day, they're doctors, and we recognize that. At the end of the day, I don't really know what I am in this industry. And that's a problem. And we've got to solve that piece. We've got to solve the educational piece to this component. We've got to recognize we have to have an American College of Paramedics.
American College of Paramedics.
I have that. So thanks, Justin. I really want to talk about this because I've just been going crazy over there. But really, those are some of the things that are going to help push our profession forward.
I like that. Let me bring in one more voice here. Geek, Jamie, stay with me. Mr. PG Silva, I'm going to call you PG just to remind you to watch your language. I found you on Twitter, @PG Silva. And you had some great comments about Firebase DMS. I don't see that you have a blog. I don't see that you have a website. It seems like you're just kind of dipping your toes into social media EMS. What do you think of all this that's been going on?
Well, let me give you a little bit of a background about myself, my experiences, and how it kind of clouds and maybe biases some of my judgment. I've been doing this for about 11 years. I started off as a volunteer firefighter in one of the local communities in my state. It just so happened to be one of the few communities the EMS service was run by the town, but the fire service was run by districts. And from there, I went to be a paid part-time firefighter with an EMS unit in our station, running EMS calls. We would run with them for anything ALS or anything where they needed assistance. But my job was to be on the back step of that engine and eventually driving it and so on and so forth. Along the way, got my basic, got my ALS certification. I'm not really a medic. I'm a cardiac. It's a state thing. But it's another topic for another time. But the one thing I learned was that even though these guys were EMS workers on the rescue, they were firefighters. That's all they would tell you. Oh, where do you guys work? I'm a firefighter. Oh, what do you do? I'm a firefighter. No, you're not. You drive the big white truck with the stretcher in the back and the IV bags and the defibrillator and Life Pack 12 and everything else. But if you talk to them for a few minutes, well, I'm a firefighter. And I started to learn that everybody in my state that does what I call real EMS, in other words, not a glorified taxi service, refers to themselves as a firefighter. There's no identity in the emergency medical field. There's no identity for what we do. And that kind of got me more interested. And when I moved out to where I live now and joined my local volunteer department, started doing a lot more EMS. That's when I started jumping into this whole social media aspect of EMS and realized how much I really didn't know.
Okay. Did we lose Justin, or is he just not paying attention? I'm taking over his show now.
Aha, we've got it back.
Hey.
Oh, hello.
Watch it, hey, it's the happy hour. I had to go re-tap one of the kegs downstairs. It's very important to keep the drinks flowing here on the happy hour. But Paul, I just wanted to comment. Do you think that that this social media can kind of bring us together to kind of break that stigma of the I'm a EMT or I drive an ambulance? Instead of, you walk into a room and what do? I'm a fireman. Everybody knows. You walk into a room. Oh well, I work on an ambulance. You know, there's like Chris was saying, nobody really knows. You know what? Oh, I work on an ambulance. What do you do? Oh, well, I do this and I do that and I do this. And, you know, but it's painted red and it says fire department on the side, but I don't really identify as a firefighter. Do you think that this community that's kind of building up online could possibly lead to more of a recognition in pre-hospital medicine?
Probably on the grander scale, it will. It'll let people start talking to each other and it'll open some horizons. It'll open some people's eyes. They'll get a chance to see how it's done elsewhere. That the way you do it in your backyard is not necessarily the only way to do it. It's not necessarily the right way to do it. I can tell you, though, that where I live, you can have all the social media in the world. The guys who spend 20 years in the big white truck will always call themselves firefighters. They're not going to break that down.
Mm-hmm. No matter how hard we try with stuff like, I don't know, Medicast podcast, the EMS Garage, Chronicles of EMS, all these new ways to share ideas. You don't think that's going to move us faster forward? I mean, the fire service has had a 200-year head start on us.
So, right, and you're kind of going where I was about to head. You might see that change with some of the newer folks coming into the service who have a different educational standard, who see it from a more holistic a view that everything's kind of integrated, and many of which actually want to be doing EMS, and mm-hmm. they'll start breaking down those barriers. The dinosaurs, however, will stay in place, and that's going to be a long time. You're not going to move them.
No, but they are starting to go to their retirement seminars.
Which yes, is they are.
Yes, they are. Mr. Bill Toon is also in the chat room. I see the chat room is moving very quickly. I see Chris Montero still discussing compression socks. Chris, we have moved on in the discussion. Oh, I didn't know if you knew. It looks like you and Jamie are still talking about making sure they're the right size. They're sizing on these things? I thought it was just small.
It's all about preventing blood clots, folks. That's really what it's there for.
It, It absolutely is. Mr. Bill Toon, EMS Educast, are you there?
Yes, and I think the compression socks as you grow older are even more important, since many of you sound like you're relatively new to the EMS business. So, I'm old in comparison, but
Can we start comparing how old we are? Because I've got 20 years in EMS.
I was certified as an EMT in 1975.
Oh, my God, you are old.
That's amazing, Bill, because I wasn't even alive then.
Yeah, you can stop with that. We keep hiring people every day, frequently, that they don't even know what you can mention, bands or Johnny and Roy. It's really tough. Skip Kirkwood and I can talk about things like that. So.
Nice.
We actually were working in New Jersey at about the same time when he used to ride a bus. So it's a very good discussion, and I am going to take it from the education point of view. And I think the challenge that we face here, and it's been discussed by people, is I don't really care who delivers, in the sense what the medium is used, whether it's fire-based, whether it's third service, hospital-based or anything. But you have to have a group of people out there that are capable of the delivery that you want to do. And nursing is a great example. They've taken a core curriculum to create the nurse, and with that basis, they can diversify into many, many different fields. Think about it, when a nurse can go into not only nurse practitioner, nurse anesthesia, industrial nurse, preventative nursing, infectious control nursing. I mean, their ability to diversify within their profession and even in different areas within the hospital, both in and out of the hospital, because you have public health nursing, home health nursing, it just is endless. That in many ways, I think that we would be better to model ourselves after that. But one of the things that they worked on, the most important things, was to establish educational standards. For example, you cannot get a nursing degree in any state unless you graduate from an accredited nursing program. You don't have to graduate from an accredited paramedic program to become a paramedic. Now, the registry is making a big step here in a couple of years, where you will not be able to sit for the National Registry exam unless you're a graduate of an accredited paramedic program. And, of course, you can hear the screams of foul all across the spectrum about that, because that's going to be taking place. And I look at that as a good thing. But until we have some standards that raise the educational expectations, it's very hard to have us be able to diversify. You know, I give, even in Chris's shop there, the Geeky Medic, he talks about his community-based paramedic program. His paramedic still, I'm sure it's not the new paramedic that's got 2 or 3 years' worth of experience, that is probably one of their community health practitioners, but it's probably their more tenured employees that have received additional training, and their scope of practice outside of what they're really doing initially is going to be limited until they can get some experience with it. But it's definitely a role that we can certainly play in. And then again, the question is going to have to be, is how does it get reimbursed at some point? But there is two components to our delivery. There is emergent, where someone has to get to a hospital right away, and then there's the other part of what we could be doing, and that's in preventative health care and continuum of health care, which would be the subacute type patient. So, again, that's more of my stance that I take on it. I don't care if you drive around in a red truck or a green truck or a blue truck. I've seen almost all the colors in all the years, and I can tell you that that doesn't matter. It's the person that's in it. It's there. Do they have the skills, attitude, and knowledge, you know, the knowledge, skills, and attitude to do the profession? And I would say that skills are the least important. It's the attitude and it's the knowledge that are the most important for the profession. And I'll take my comments offline.
I agree with that completely, that it is the person that's doing it that needs to be the one that's passionate about it. You know, you can put someone who doesn't want to do patient care through an accredited program. They can pass the test, the A, B, C, D, E, and get through all that and then hit the street. You know, we all on the blogs and such, we talk about these patch mills that are out there teaching paramedic students the colors of boxes to use instead of the drugs, reactions and adverse reactions and things like that. But no one seems to have ever gone to a patch mill. It's always, oh, this guy I work with, he's an idiot. He went to a patch mill. Are we ever just going to stand up and finally say that we need to start hiring people who are passionate about EMS?
I can tell you within our system, one of the most important things that we try to look at when we interview someone within our systems is we'd really try to get down to what is the core of the person. Because we believe that you have to be inherently good. You can't necessarily you can't teach someone to be good. And if they don't have that basic sense of, you know, why what they're doing and they're motivated by doing good, then they can have all – you can teach them to stick an IV or a tube in anyone. That doesn't mean anything if they can't communicate and work with the person that's across from them. So that is a critical component. But many education programs do not want to address the affective domain. That was one of our discussions we had tonight on the EMS Educast, was discussing the need to evaluate the affective domain and to that someone's attitude can be graded and scored. And while you may not be able to change them internally, you certainly can tell them what the expected behavior is when you're doing this type of work, and that they'll be held to that. And if they can't do it, then they won't have a job.
I am nodding enthusiastically to what you're saying. I love hearing it. Mr. Bill Toon, thank you so much from EMS Educast. Will you be in San Francisco for the premiere of Chronicles of EMS this Friday?
No, I'm sorry that I'm going to miss out on that. I've been following it all along, and I've kept trying to make it happen, but nope, I'll have to watch it virtually.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we hope to see you in the chat room. It's going to be live there. I'm going to ask all my guests to come back on, click that unmute button, and let's talk about Chronicles just real quick. We're coming up on 1 hour here, and Montero is going to reach through the Skype headset and strangle me if we go too long because he let me hijack his show. Chris Kaiser, I know you're going to be there live in San Francisco with us, red hair and all, correct?
Yes, I am. Absolutely, and I cannot wait.
And Mr. Montero, you will be there?
Absolutely. Me, the missus, the whole gang.
You're bringing the kids and the dog? That's fantastic.
No, actually, they're staying home.
Good. Mr. Davis?
Unfortunately, couldn't make it work out with other travel going on this month, but I'm hoping to see you and Mark down in Baltimore. You'll be in my neck of the woods and the EMS today in, what, 3-4 weeks from now?
Yes, Mr. Glenn Corson and myself will be the guests of Zoll Medical at the Zoll booth at EMS Today, put on by GEMS. They're in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm hoping it'll stop snowing. Because if it goes below 50,
me too.
If it goes below 50, the happy medic cannot function. I'm a sixth generation Californian. I'm freezing tonight, and it's maybe 48 outside, and I like to brag about that. But yes, we will be in Baltimore, both Mark and I, two shows a day, the 5th and the 6th of March, the Friday and the Saturday. Zoll's going to have us there to show Chronicles of EMS, the pilot episode, answer questions about it. We're hoping to meet as many people as we can that aren't able to make it to San Francisco on the 12th, meet them out there. Mr. Silva, even though you're only on Twitter for right now, any chance you're going to come out and be with us at the premiere?
As much as I'd love to, I'm afraid I won't be able to. I'm kind of stuck out here.
Stuck out there because of the snow or job responsibilities?
Mostly job responsibilities. As much as I would love to get away from the snow and the 18 degrees I have outside, I don't think work would accept me taking off for too many days, at least at this point.
All right. And Mr. Sean Eddy, medicmadness.com, will you be joining us at the premiere?
Certainly wish I could, but getting out of work is probably not going to happen.
Oh, all right. Well, I do have to say, gentlemen, thank you very much for letting me bend your ear about some of these topics. It has been, on my end, a wonderful conversation. I enjoyed speaking with all of you. I'm glad you came on for the first and possibly only ever happy hour. For those of you at home listening, this is a lot harder than it sounds. when you download it on your iPod and then you go and clean the house and you listen and you think, man, I could have a show. No, I just used up about 3 weeks worth of talking points in 1 hour with these fantastic professionals. Just real quick, any comments here at the end? Anybody want to call anybody else out on something that was said, and I can step back and the battle royale of what works best?
I'm going to speak up here because I think that one of the things that I've kind of realized as I've heard everybody's points, our systems are working the way they do in many different parts of the country. And I don't think I disagreed with a lot of what everybody was saying. I think we all want this EMS system to work better than it does right now. And I think that that may be a different solution for different parts of the country in different areas of the country. What works in a metropolitan area with a lot of call volume and people close together isn't going to work in a suburban area or a rural area of the country. And I think that what we do need to do is forward the entire profession and continue to raise standards and expectations for EMS providers and make ourselves be seen as part of the medical profession, be medical professionals seen alongside nurses, alongside physicians, and that we're providing just a different type of care and a different aspect of the whole system.
Agreed. I like it. Mr. Eddie, any comments on that? Any comments to wrap us up?
No, I think I'm pretty much used up at this point.
It's amazing that we can get this many people who work in completely different systems, different parts of the country, delivering care from different colored ambulances, and we all agree on where the future of the profession should be. What does that tell you?
Because you're all so young.
True. You know, if there is one thing I could say to echo what was said earlier about it just being the person inside of the ambulance delivering the care and not necessarily the type of service itself, I do 100% agree with that. I think that was a very valid point.
Certainly, and definitely something to come away with. Anyone else? Geek? Mr. Kaiser?
Of course, I always have something to say. And I love that you said it's hard to do. It is hard to do. It's hard. And they wonder, and I try to go on the Educast occasionally, and I'm like, those guys blow me away. So, yeah, you got it. This is a, but it's really, it's a fun job, wouldn't you agree, Justin? I'm going
Absolutely.
Back to the podcast. I'm diverting a minute.
Yeah, I have here in my notes, make redheaded stepchild joke.
Nice. Nice.
Don't cite any published research.
Nice.
And make sure I tell Chris it's hard. I hit my 3 points.
Nice, I love it. Hey, one quick question though: are you gonna? Is Zoll for your price to get in the show? Are they gonna dress you up as an E series?
Actually, I'm gonna be dressed up as the new R series.
Ooh, nice.
Yes. I tried to sell them on the HM series, which is just me with an iPad. But apparently they didn't go for that, didn't think it was a good idea.
Is it strategically placed?
Yes, it is.
Right over your face?
And like I told Carissa Karamanis O'Brien, who worked very diligently to work point with Zoll to try to get us out there on behalf of the Chronicles, I asked her if nudity was going to be allowed or not in the Zoll booth.
Now, would you be the one that would be nude, or
well, here's the thing,
somebody else?
I told her it was a deal breaker, and she assumed I meant that I wanted to be nude, but I wanted to make sure that I didn't have to be.
Oh my goodness, dude.
Wow.
It's always better to be nude by choice.
Well, do they want me there to talk about Chronicles, or is this some new thing that they're trying to do to drum up business in the booth? I don't know. All I do know is that I'm very appreciative of Zoll for picking up on Chronicles of EMS before we even knew what it was going to be on the apparatus floor of Station 13 in the San Francisco Financial District. Roy Knifton, the Zoll rep, took out his phone and told his supervisor that there's these guys making a TV show and they're talking about EMS 2.0 and this other stuff, and I think it's something we should pay attention to. Skip ahead, here we are.
I completely agree, and I wish there were more visionary companies in this marketplace. And I quite honestly, you know what? I think we're going to get sponsors like Southwest Airlines, or I mean something like that that's not even in our industry, and they're going to be like, "Oh, you mean there's like a million and some odd of those professionals watching this kind of stuff and listening every week, and why aren't we in on that?" And all the medical people are like, "Oh, we missed the boat." And I think that that's going to happen, but it's going to take time. So, but gosh, you guys rocked that show. Both Justin and I have seen the episode, so don't tell Ted we're telling you this. But you'll hear this Thursday, so it doesn't really matter. And it is awesome.
The first episode will be how long?
It comes in at just around 20 minutes.
Good.
It's perfect.
So it's an excellent start. And again, I just, the key thing is it would be really wonderful to have a show that truly reflects the practice. For, you know, there's been so many failures over the years, and there's, at least for EMS, there have been some better shows, at least in the law enforcement, for sure. Hospitals have had some interesting experiences with what they've done. I'm still not sure there's also been a really good fire-based one yet.
I think this might lead to something like that, for sure, because once people understand how this medium can be used. And this show was born literally in Atlanta at a bar, and I was telling Ted, I was like, you know, if we could do this thing about reality, and then Justin and Mark went, yeah, we lost our sponsorship, or we lost the BBC taping this, and I'm like, here we go, let's make this marriage happen. And it was born, and I tell you, there's so many exciting things coming up for this show, I cannot even believe it. And it's sprung other shows. We've got like two or three other shows working just because of this one show, so I'm very excited about it. And thank you guys for having the vision to do that, Justin. You and Mark spearheaded this since, what, March of last year? Easily.
Yeah, we started talking about a month after he came on and did a post about telling a patient no and driving away. And I thought, oh my God, I got to meet this guy, and I'm packing my bags. No,
you know, and you mentioned sponsorship is it's a shame that I think some of the EMS ancillaries, you know, the publishers or the vendors have lost it. You know, I know if Jim Page was still alive, I have strong feelings that, as I know him, he would have certainly have found ways to support this for its ever so important move. And I do hope that, the current leadership at GEMS, but, you know, GEMS is a much different organization now than what it used to be back in the days when it was a private company owned by Jim.
Yep, I agree. Well, and I think even some of the magazines are like, we'll send somebody. We're not sure yet. And EMS1, the only real online presence for EMS news, is going, hey, we'll be there. We'll do it. Mm-hmm. We want to be a part of that. You know, they get it. So I agree. And there are some, we've actually been talking with an EMS luminary very, very recently this past weekend, and you'll see more on that coming soon. I can't really reveal much, but it's very exciting, and I'm really hoping that person wants to join this show. So Justin, you get the outro to this week. You get to say what you want.
I like rainbows. That's what I'll say.
And unicorns,
that's right, Geek. No, just to take us out of the week, a wonderful discussion, branching off in different directions I never could have imagined. We've got just about everybody represented here, from the hardcore podcasting guys. We've got Chris Kaiser over there making things happen. Mr. Silva just poking his toes into social media with the Twitter, Mr. Eddie with his brand new blog, and Bill Toon with EMS Educast as well. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the Happy Hour and helping me along in my discussion. It was a good time, and we're going to have to do this in person, whether it be in San Francisco, Baltimore, or other EMS conferences. If I can get there, Happy Hour, whether it's recorded and played on iTunes later or not, it'll happen.
Does that mean you're buying?
If I have a sponsor, my sponsor will buy.
Excellent.
How's that?
Count me in.
You mean your AA sponsor, or
my AA sponsor never buys?
That's true. That's a shame.
So, and just to do the Montera here, Mr. Toon, where can people find you on the interwebs machine?
Two places that are very good to find me is Twitter @WFToon, And then also is WFToon on Facebook.
Wonderful. And Mr. Sean Eddy, where can people find you on the magical interwebs machine?
You can find me on Twitter at Sean Eddy. You can find me on my blog at medicmadness.com. And you can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Sean Eddy.
Great. And I did love your post about don't get your hoses in a bunch. That was fun to read. Mr. PG, you kept it PG. I appreciate it very much.
I did
much.
My best. I did what I could.
Can folks find you, aside from following you on Twitter, at PG Silva, can they find you anywhere else?
Not really. I do have a Facebook account, but that's a little too much information for here. But you know what? Hit me up on Twitter, and we'll take it from there.
There you go. And Mr. Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and yet another online personality that just added medic to something that you do.
Well, you can find me on PodMedic anywhere, twitter.com/PodMedic, facebook.com/PodMedic, and of course the MedicCast podcast, which comes out every week for the last over 4 years now, every Sunday night. So looking forward to being part of this. I can't wait to see you guys in Baltimore and get a chance to see the show and chat with you guys. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
It is going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. Mr. Christopher Kaiser, CKEMTP, where else are you, sir?
I am always at lifeunderthelights.com. I am at CKEMTP on the magical Twitter machine, which is just so much fun. And I am at Facebook, Chris Kaiser. If you can find me, there's a lot of Chris Kaisers out there, and a lot of them are physicists, which is very strange, and therefore smarter than me. You'll also find me at the Chronicles of EMS premiere coming up. And I can't wait.
Wonderful. It is going to be a good time. Thank you very much, sir. And Mr. Montera, where can people find you, sir?
Wow. I never get that chance. I always have to do it myself. Thank you. First, Chris Kaiser, I just have to say one thing. I was getting ready to type it, but I think it's funnier if I say it. You sound like that nerdy dude from The Simpsons, that the professor dude.
You're calling me Professor Frink? That is such an honor.
It's awesome. Isn't that great? I mean, you sound exactly like that guy. And I'm like, when you said physicist, I'm like, that's where I've heard his voice. That's awesome, dude. I'm honored to be on the podcast.
Tangent
with you.
Here. Somebody on Twitter today recommended me on Twitter to some Twitter thing. Nice. And they recommended me, some guy I didn't know, and Mike Ditka. Ooh. So that's
Ditka
today.
Oh, nice. Wow. You're in the Hall of Fame. Hey, and I really feel sorry for not including you in the show notes last week. You were there and you're in it, but I apologize. And you're in it this week. So sorry about that. You can find me, Geeky Medic, everywhere. Facebook, Twitter. You can find my blog, Geeky Medic, that doesn't exist right now. You can find Chris Montera if you really want to read something crazy, chrismontera.com. And other shows coming up, you'll just have to wait and see. EMS Leadership Podcast, of course, this podcast. I help. I just barely run EMS Educast anymore. That's all Greg Fries, and I love him for it. And that's me.
Wonderful. Thank you, sir. And, of course, for the listeners, this was the happy hour. I took over the EMS Garage podcast because I had a few things to say, and Mr. Montero was kind enough to let me do it. Wherever you are on the magical interwebs machine, just type in the happy medic, hit enter, I'm there. Until the next time on the happy hour, I'm going back in service. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining. And I've got Mr. Setla bothering me. My producer's calling. I have to go. I'll be in my trailer.